I love Flatcaster. I've been on it more or less since it started. Something that's been really cool to see over the past like year is obviously it started as like a one-for-one Twitter clone, which sounds like counterintuitive as like a starting point, because it's like, well, why would you copy a thing that already exists? But I think they very smartly have innovated so well on the stack underneath it. Like, they've essentially created a new layer of the blockchain stack with Flatcaster hubs, which is passing around signed messages in real time without having to submit them to a blockchain. So it's like, that means that every single cast, every single reaction, every single like, you can guarantee that it came from a particular user because it's being cryptographically signed by them, but you don't have to bear the cost of actually submitting them on chain. So it's unlocked a very new and high throughput part of the stack that hasn't really existed before. What sounds obvious in hindsight is that, well, if every single user has an address and you have all of these social, you have a social graph and all these metrics you can play with, the types of token distributions you can do is like crazy. You can just do things like distribute an airdrop, like Flatcaster OG NFTs, and start to like do novel gating. And then obviously frames are a further breakthrough on that. It's been awesome kind of like experimenting and seeing Zora as like part of that kind of ecosystem where it's like, pushing the limits of like in-app minting with mint with warps, and now with frames, and then there's boosts as well. I think Dan is easily one of the top users of Zora. I think for Flatcaster and himself, like they've been minting all of their kind of protocol announcements and dropping like Flatcaster OG NFTs. And I think like he's just like a big supporter of Zora. I'm a big supporter of Flatcaster. And I think like they're very complementary in different ways. Like we've kind of got like social graph on the Flatcaster side. Then you've got like content, media, asset ownership layer on the Zora side. And they very clearly pair well together. So it's been fun kind of like building alongside each other. Yo, grab your headphones, get ready to roll. Zero bar coming at you, taking control. We're talking about now, NFTs and Web3. Doing it big, bringing the knowledge for free. Reimagine the game, we're breaking all the chains. Open source, public goods, it's a whole new terrain. Educate, elevate, empower the crew. Zero bar revolution, we're coming for you. Welcome back to Zero Pod, a CC0 podcast about nouns and enjoying Ethereum. I'm your host, Tony Hawk, flying solo this week with no co-host, but our guest today is the legend himself, Jacob Horn, founder of Zora. I, for one, am super excited about this conversation. Welcome, Jacob, to Zero Pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Super awesome to have you here. Before we jump in, I just wanted to take a minute just to throw a little bit of flowers. I want to say that I'm a huge fan of everything you've been building with Zora. And everything that you've been shipping, your shipping speed is just immaculate at Zora. And I think it's an inspiration to see how much you guys have helped creators. And I think the success that you guys are having is a reflection of that. And I just wanted to give you those flowers out of the gate. So
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thanks for being one of like the pioneering creators on Zora. I think you might have a record of most amount of reported issues and bug tickets, and you keep powering through it.
And most annoying client, yes, always pinging you at all hours.
I think you easily one of the most prolific video creators on Zora, and I think like getting videos to work on IPFS and have it work well is actually like a surprisingly difficult technical challenge. So it's as we've discovered.
The good thing is it's like an arms race on both sides. On my side, I'm trying to get my files like as fucking small as they possibly can be, and on your side you're trying to get, you know, IPFS to work with as big a file as possible, and we're kind of meeting somewhere in the middle. It's working.
We'll figure it out.
It's really cool, but we'll talk a little bit more about boosted mints and things later, but I'm really excited for this as sort of a medium for creators to be able to find new distribution, because seeing a lot more traction on that side than we are on like the traditional Web2 distribution side. So we could chat a little bit more about that later.
Awesome.
To start things off, we always, you know, we usually like to sort of turn back the clock, go way back and hear a little bit about people's journey on this pod. So I would love to hear, if you don't mind sharing, like your crypto journey. Like, how did you end up an on-chain person, a very on-chain person? How did that happen for you?
That's a good question. It was some combination of college. It's like 2012, and then my dad, actually. Right. So I had a
I had like a professor at college that was very into Bitcoin at the time and was speaking about it. I studied computer science.
Okay.
And my dad, he's like a wizard of an engineer in his own right.
I've read a lot of his essays and stuff. He's really interesting.
Yeah. He was also like coming across Bitcoin at the same time. And the thing that was really exciting to me about Bitcoin when I first heard about it was the idea that you could just create a currency for anything. Obviously like Bitcoin was fascinating, but I was like, oh wait, like you could take this open source software and then you could probably apply it to theoretically anything on the internet. So my journey was kind of like first hearing about Bitcoin, learning about Counterparty, which was like a protocol of some kind on top of Bitcoin that let you create what were called colored coins, basically like the first versions of it.
Yeah.
Which you couldn't really do much with because it was Bitcoin, like only so much programming you can do on top of
many,
that.
Many such cases, yeah.
Yeah. So then when Ethereum came out, it just made perfect sense to me because I was like, well, sweet, like everything I wanted to on Bitcoin is now 100 times easier on Ethereum. And I was mostly just like hacking on side projects, you know, in college, university in Sydney, and tweeting about it, writing about it. And like through tweeting about it and writing about it, I kind of came across the radar of the folks at Coinbase in like 2016. So that led to me moving from Sydney to San Francisco. And then I joined Coinbase. Yeah, it was a big move. So my first job, I basically started as an intern at Coinbase. And then I thought I was going to be there for 3 months. It ended up being for almost 4 years.
And, it seems like that sounds like a meme or like the Coinbase intern.
Yeah, exactly. But I had a really amazing journey there. Like, I guess it was like, I couldn't tell if it was like 60 or 100 people when I joined, but by the time I left, it was like 1200. And I was lucky to work with some like really amazing people there. And I ended up basically like leading the USDC project from inside Coinbase. So like, I got locked in a room with like two engineers. We helped build that out. Flew over to Boston with like Balaji and the crew to kind of like do the deal with Circle. And then I guess that was like probably the biggest project I did at Coinbase. And then while working on USDC, obviously Uniswap was kind of like a mind-blowing thing to see working at Coinbase because it was like a team of six or seven people. And I could like create an exchange in a single function on the spot at my laptop when I was like, well, I'm in a company of like 1200 people doing the exact same thing. Like protocols are like, this is like this like fundamentally new paradigm and were fascinating to me. And in the same era was like, I was experimenting, like creating AI art on SuperRare at the same time. I was like writing a lot about NFTs and I just kind of felt like that like original idea of you could start to use crypto to apply it to like creative projects and anything on the internet. It was like the toolkit was like emerging for that and it was able to kind of like move into that next phase. So felt that like, okay, like I think Coinbase has an incredible future, is going to be a core piece of financial infrastructure and probably a lot more for the internet. But I think like the time is ready to actually like get back to those like types of side projects I was doing. And the side project I did at Coinbase that led to Zora was called Saint Fame, which was like, I want to create a DAO and fashion brand and then create we released like a long sleeve on a bonding curve and we just kind of like shipped it late at night and then woke up the next day to done like tens of thousands of dollars in volume. It was going crazy. People were loving it. And it was like,
it was an NFT project or?
If you go to like saintfame.com, it was actually like a remix of the Unisox project. So it was an ERC-20 token on Uniswap. And you could like redeem that ERC-20 token for a real world long sleeve, basically. Long sleeve t-shirt.
Right, gotcha. Cool.
And then, yeah. And then
for some reason, when you said long sleeve the first time, I thought it was like a tech term. It's like, you know, the long sleeve of crypto.
Yeah, that's funny. And yeah, that was like the jumping off point to Zora. And now Zora's, I guess it's coming up on a 4 year. It's supposed to be 4 years this year, which is kind of unreal.
Congratulations.
But I guess that's been my journey of how I got into crypto. And then I guess where I'm at.
Well,
now.
you've led me right into asking about Zora. I definitely want to hear the Zora origin story as well. But before I do, I wanted to ask quickly about Coinbase. You know, so people have joked about the Coinbase Mafia, all these alum who worked at Coinbase during that time, and many have gone on to do pretty great things. Why do you think that is? Do you think it was just a product of the time, or the product of the people, or both?
Well, I think Brian and Fred were just like had an incredible knack at finding like all sorts of crazy and wonderful people from anywhere around the world. They're just like, I think, had a really strong passion and deep belief in like crypto as a technology, and then more or less had the skills to just like figure it out and make things happen. And then I think like a lot of the Coinbase culture is obviously about like pragmatism, and like Dan Romero, like who runs Farcasta, who I got to work with at the time, they're like, I think he wrote like a great essay on like the kind of Coinbase pragmatic approach. But Coinbase is like so successful in part because it's a little counterintuitive, like creating the most trusted thing in a trustless ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what, why does that work? Or it's like actually using centralization as a way to build better products that have easier UX as an onboarding point. These are like relatively counterintuitive or sound like at odds with the technology, but it's like adding to the spectrum of it.
Well, and now they're kind of straddling that line with Base too, and like showing that it can be kind of married with that permissionless ethos as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like, I don't know, Coinbase people just love the technology, good thinkers, and then, but I think like the, just learning how to ship and build and then making like the pragmatism, I think is like a big cultural trait that tends to work well. And then I think there's like a kind of like persistence or equanimity where it's just like, you know, crypto has these crazy volatile swings. And just making sure you don't get like too lost in the sauce of like the ups and downs, and having a clear idea of what you're trying to do, and, you know, put one foot in front of the other, I think is like a.
Yeah, maybe that dedication to shipping is part of that as well. Because when you have your head down working on things, it's a lot easier to ignore the ups and downs of the market and all the rest of that.
It's the only thing you can control. Like you can't really control much else. So it's like, it's the only thing you can control. So it's like it's the thing you spend most of your focus and energy on, at least as much as you can. Obviously, like sometimes things can be so extreme that you can come off kilter a little bit, but that's part of the game.
Awesome. All right, let's talk about Zora. You said it's almost 4 years now that Zora has been in operation. Where did the sort of concept for Zora come from? I know you mentioned that you had sort of done some experimentation with these physicals at Coinbase, but where did the idea come from to do like an NFT native platform? And also I'd love to know where the name came from. I actually know, but I'd love our listeners to learn the story.
Yeah, so I guess the big idea for Zora is basically creativity and ideas generally are exceptionally valuable things, and they've had an information too. But up until crypto, it's been very hard to capture the value and coordinate around them, just in and of themselves. Like in price systems, you to like create an object or an ownership vehicle around an idea, you need to create a company, and then you have to pick the jurisdiction for that company, and then immediately you're starting to like block off different types of people around the world who can access and participate in that.
Yeah.
Versus crypto, if you create like a token, be it an ERC-20 token or an NFT, you can now create this like universally accessible thing that people can buy into, they can own, and then they can start to coordinate around and do things with. So the Zora journey started with that first experiment where it's like, well, there was this DAO side and trying to capture and coordinate around the brand, and then there was the token side, which was like the, in this case, a shirt, and that was like the specific idea. I think the DAO side was like a little bit too early at the time, so we focused on the token piece,
right?
And then that basically sent us into this idea maze where it started with ERC-20 tokens and physicals, and then very quickly, as we were starting to see like where the market was at and like what was kind of net new about the medium, it was actually like NFTs. And then like content and media are actually like a huge unlock. And then we just started building around that. And over the past, like, I guess 4 years, it's been experimenting with like, well, how much of that should you bring on chain? So like the earliest versions of Zora was like on-chain maximalism to like, it was not very pragmatic and it was very clunky and heavy. But over time, it's like, well, if we make it easier and easier for people to bring a video or a song or an image or an essay on chain without having to know anything about crypto.
Yeah.
And then finding and experimenting with different market models that underpin that. So we originally started with like one-of-one auctions. Now we're at this much more like fluid timed edition model where like many people can own it and do things with.
Yeah. And you've also gone all the way to the other side of that spectrum too, where you can essentially mint something to, on chain without ever having any ETH in your wallet. I mean,
yeah, exactly. You can literally onboard by just creating content like you would on most other platforms.
Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been, we've like been just refining and finding the right product form factor to get at that really big idea. And I think over the past like year or so, the two really big changes was like, we're not focusing on any collectibles per se, purely content. And the UX for that is like marketplace UX is horrible content consumption UX. So yep. Like Zora looks very different to what people typically associate with like
Spotify.
Or it's like, you're not going to watch a video on OpenSea, but you watch videos on Zora because we've like designed it to be that way. And then right. You just happen to put it there because, if you like it, you mint it.
In fact, there's literally some videos that you can't watch on OpenSea. Like it's if they're not the right encoding or there was famously This Is Nouns. Remember they did release of This Is Nouns and you couldn't watch it. And it's like, it's a video NFT you can't watch. This will go great. Yeah.
So over the past year, and then, there's lots of other details like moving from L1 to L2, but the sum total of all of that has meant like, I think we've seen over 1.5 million users like minting. And then a little over 100,000 creators you're creating on chain now. And every That's month incredible. There's about there's like a 250,000 people every month minting now.
You posted a graph recently, it was something like 60% of new mints. Was it on Base or something? What was that graph? I don't have it handy.
The past like 3 or 4 months or so, of all NFT contracts that have been deployed, it's I think 64% of them have been deployed on Zora Network. So that's
incredible.
All NFT supply, which I think just speaks to like how easy we've made it for people to create and then how much more people are bringing on chain. It's not like I'm going to do one drop in a year and peace out. It's like people are uploading their content and media, very often.
I saw this happen in a group chat recently. It was an OPEPIN holders group chat, I think. And one of the artists there was like, oh, I just like Foundation. It's what I've always used. I always found Zora kind of clunky, whatever. They hadn't used Zora in a while. And just the amount of people that responded was like, dude, bro, you got to try Zora again. Like Zora's way easier. What are you doing on Foundation? Like the amount of people that were just in the comments, blowing you guys up saying you're wrong. Zora's easier. Yeah.
I think in 2021, very correct. I think in 2024, a lot of things have changed. We've learned a lot and built. We've learned, I think, a lot about how to build really easy to use experiences. So yeah, that's cool to hear.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Zora versus other competitors, I just wanted to comment a little bit about how, if you look at the trajectory of Zora and maybe like OpenSea or some of the mainstays, it really feels like Zora is kind of like on this upward trajectory, always growing, always iterating, while the blue and the orange platforms are seem to be mostly stagnating. And I don't want you to speak badly of competitors or anything, but just in general, why do you think that is? Why do you think that Zora is able to grow in the same period?
So I increasingly think of them as complementary to what we're doing. Like I think Blur and OpenSea are both secondary marketplaces, and I think they're like that's where you buy and sell more often than not, like 10K PFP collections or like generative collections on the secondary.
Right.
And what I think how Zora kind of positioned itself over the past couple of years is like we're focused on the primary market and we're not focused on 10K PFPs or collectibles. We're focused on content, which was very nascent at the time. But I think what we've seen happen over the past 2 years is we've made it easier and easier for people to bring things on chain. More and more things are coming on chain. And it turns out that people not only want to collect, PFPs, they actually want to collect videos they really like or songs they really like, content that they really like. And that's just been growing consistently.
And that's something that wouldn't have been possible without the L2 narrative actually coming to pass, right? Can you talk a little bit about that and how that's been complementary and how you decided to launch an L2 on the OP stack for Zora themselves? Yes.
So this was where like the pragmatism came in. So I think like early versions of ourselves at Zora was like ETH L1 all the way, complete maximalism of Ethereum.
Yeah, many such cases. Myself too, I was like that, yeah.
And then I think what happened was is like we started finding real traction. We were getting like, you know, tens of thousands. I think we had like a month of like 100,000 collectors. And then it was April of 2023. It was like, we call it the Pepe week. Basically, there was the Pepe meme coin on ETH. Yeah. And it killed every other action on chain. Like we were going from tens of thousands of transactions to, I think it was 12 total for the whole week. And we were like, oh, okay.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because like we had that exact same moment on live on Spaces. We had our Nomo Nouns project, which we did like a special edition every day that we would mint.
Yeah.
And during that Pepe week, we didn't sell a single Nomo all week. And it's like, well, who's going to mint this Nomo for, at the time it was $5 and gas was $60. It was that exact week that we were like, we've got to migrate to an L2. And Zora didn't exist at the time as an L2, but we ended up migrating over to Optimism. But it was exactly the same impetus that pushed us. And we're like, okay, we got to do something here. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was, I think we could see that people want to do this, but they don't want to spend that much for it. So then it became like, well, what is actually the best way to move to L2? And I think we really like the technology of the OP stack. And I think we had a belief that like L2s generally will be like increasingly commoditized. So when you see like a commodity marketplace, typically like brand and distribution are really important differentiators.
Right.
Like Starbucks coffee, Nike sneakers, Tiffany diamonds, like those are commodities with a really strong brand, and that's the reason that they tend to work.
Yeah.
And we actually felt that we had a strong enough brand and then enough on-chain native distribution that we could put forward our own L2. And then if that would work, we can then start to do all sorts of crazy new features and business models and things that happen when you own the whole stack.
Right.
So like having a tightly integrated platform, protocol, and network. But we also wanted to take like a kind of a bigger picture view, and it's like that might be wrong, and each network might actually have their own distinct aesthetics and communities. So let's architect Zora in a way where we can actually support multiple networks on day one.
I think that was smart though, because if you had gate kept it, if you'd made it a walled garden, I think it would have actually shot yourselves in the foot more so, just because you can't control, you know, where culture is going to go, right? And so it's good to
Also, there's like bad vibes. It's like, who knows? So when we launched L2s, we simultaneously launched Zora, OP mainnet, and then we were day one supporters of Base. And then more recently, we've added Arbitrum. And that's what worked really well for us, because I think, as you've seen too, like Base has its own unique community and its unique like kind of flavor of projects and things going on. Same thing with OP mainnet, same thing with Arbitrum. Same thing with Zora, and they're all additive and actually quite distinct.
Yeah.
And the Zora platform and protocol, which is across all of them, has grown substantially since we moved from L1 to L2. It's basically 10x or more across the board.
So one of the reasons why I think that probably has happened is that you guys have done an amazing job working with the Reservoir team of abstracting that L2 landscape, and just being able for end users to be able to mint something on Base, but they have their ETH on Arbitrum and not really know the difference. Can you talk a little bit about your decision to abstract that whole layer away?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest hesitations we had with L2s in the first place is just like it's a whole other layer of friction and like a mental model and thing that like you just don't want to have to expose to people. Like crypto is hard enough. Like, I mean, it was like people, it's like, well, your ETH is in this slightly different place and you have to move it through. And, you know, there's all these like time constraints and costs. Like, it's just too much.
Yeah. Somebody posted on, I think it was on Farcaster, and they posted like a screenshot of their Rainbow wallet, and like the first 10 tokens were ETH. And they're like, this is great for onboarding new people.
Yeah. And I think we've learned that like the easier you make things, the more people are able to use it, then the more people use it. Like such a simple train of thought. But when applied to the L2 side, it's like, well, from a platform perspective and user experience perspective, let's actually minimize the amount of friction and even understanding that people have to have of like where an NFT actually is. So when you're creating, like, advanced users can be very intentional, which like with which networks they want to deploy to.
Yeah.
And for someone who's collecting, instead of like framing things as L2s, we actually just frame them as payment methods. So instead of having to like go bridge, wait for the bridge to happen, then come back to Zora and then mint, we just go, hey, you can mint. Do you want to pay with your ETH on Zora, on Base, on Arbitrum, on OP? And then you just select and you press go. So it's just,
I love
like,
that.
We made a best network for people most often, so they don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, like where they have their liquidity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. We made a video about 5 months ago that was more focused on optimism, but also talked about Zora and Base. And the challenge that I gave to Jack on our video team was, let's make a video that teaches people how to bridge without ever using the word bridge. And the way we ended up doing that was kind of making a metaphor to like traditional TradFi bank accounts and like, you know, ETH on mainnet's more like your savings account. You wouldn't, you know, go use your locked savings account to buy a hamburger. And we sort of talked about different L2s as being your different checking accounts. So it's cool to see that you kind of have a similar ethos or philosophy around just like method of payment, which is what, you know, normies are going to be used to seeing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that made a big difference too. I think it's anywhere between 15 to 20% of all of our mints now use that particular part of the UX. So it's obviously made a big difference in helping people mint when they otherwise wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah. Whenever you talk to people who are like bearish on Ethereum, I feel like they've never tried any of these new technologies that are out here to, you know, help with the fragmentation of liquidity and all these things, because it's really getting pretty good now, in my opinion.
Yeah, great. I think it can always go further, but like, yeah, it's I would say it's like on par with prior L1 only experiences now,
yeah,
which is great.
Agreed. One other thing that Zora has done a lot to push the space forward on is creator rewards. And I wanted to chat with you a little bit about that. I love creator rewards. I think it's amazing. It's generous on the part of Zora. And I think it's done wonders for the space in terms of empowering creators. I've often described it as, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but I would describe it almost as like a primary royalty in a way, in this sort of market where a vacuum has been created, where we brought all these artists in. We were like, hey, come on, Shane, you can be paid in perpetuity for your art. And then we kind of like bait and switch them. We were like, actually, you know, royalties aren't enforceable at the contract level and they're going to zero. And so thanks for coming. And then I feel like creator rewards kind of like has come into that vacuum and been like, well, here's a different way that you can create. And potentially, you know, if you leave it open forever, it could be a perpetual, you know, income source for artists. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they've been game-changing for creators. They've been game-changing, I think, for Zora generally. I think the way we got there was, the way the business model evolved over time was it used to be percentage-based. So it's like, you would mint NFTs and then Zora would charge a percentage.
Yeah.
But what we saw was that creators were actually like setting prices very low because they didn't want to charge their collectors much. And we were seeing millions of mints and a lot of spam actually, because like they were too cheap where they just get botted. And if it was trending on chain, then you'd see all these bots come in and that kind of ruined it and made it very muddy.
Yeah.
So then we moved from a percentage fee to a flat fee, which was like 0000, 777 ETH.
Yeah.
And Zora used to take that whole fee. So like for the first, I guess, 3 or 4 months of that model, we still saw, you know, people were actually minting just as much as they were before. And we had like 1,000x breakthrough in our business model. But then what we saw was that creators were still setting the amount they wanted to charge to basically nothing. And we didn't really think it was going to work that well if like Zora was making all of the money and the creators weren't. So
obviously,
like,
right? Well, long term.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, well, what we can do is, why don't we just give the creator the lion's share of our fee? And then not only that, there's also other platforms in our ecosystem that are helping find mints that are built on Zora smart contracts as a protocol. Why don't we actually use this as a moment to both reward the creators themselves, of course, but then also all of the other platforms outside of Zora that contribute to the ecosystem? And it was basically, I think it was an 80% hit to our fees. Like it was like, we're gonna give the 80% to everyone else. And we're going to just take a long-term view and assume that this is going to cultivate one creator's making more, and then like kind of cultivating an ecosystem of many different platforms that start to build on the protocol and therefore growing and expanding the ecosystem, which then benefits creators, that benefits everyone else.
And how's that going so far?
It's working. So like creators are making, I think like already this month there's been like over $1 million in creator awards paid out, and the month isn't even over. And now something like, I think it's 30 to 40% of mints actually come from outside of Zora.co. So it's very underrated, like how much distribution and mints are coming from, not just our website, but from platforms like Daylight, Warpcast, Mintfun, Spotlight, Interface, Surreal. Like there's a long list of these kind of emerging platforms that help curate and help people find things that they want to mint.
Yeah, we've started to see more mints from Surreal on our podcast. And I don't know if they have an automatic comment on chain, but we've started seeing a lot of comment on chain saying, I minted this on Surreal and I'm watching it on Surreal. So people are finding it there, which is cool. So I think that's the next big step is discovery. And exactly. I wanted to ask you about that a little bit. And if you have any alpha to share or anything that Zora is thinking about on how distribution and discovery can be improved on this type of stuff to compete with Web2 distribution like Spotify, YouTube, and the standard places where on-chain media usually lives, online media usually lives.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think one part of it, which we touched on, is like one of the superpowers of crypto is you can have many platforms that are all looking at the same content. So like that's just such a new thing. Like in Web2, you post on YouTube, you can only watch on YouTube. Maybe it gets embedded, but like other developers aren't allowed to build on top of YouTube videos.
Yeah, and then you get like Twitter X, which like kills the embeds from YouTube, and they're all battling against each other. And it's no bueno for the content creator.
So I think Ukraine on Zora, but it's now showing up in many different places. And I think that's going to be like a gradually then suddenly thing where it's like, obviously that sounds like a big deal. We're starting to see that play out where you're getting mints come from everywhere. But I think if we look up 5 years from now, like that's probably going to be like the holy shit moment where it's like you create in one place and now it's getting dispersed all across the internet to all these different places that you can't even imagine.
And it's not even like, it's not even going anywhere. It's like people
It's not going anywhere. Everyone's
coming to you.
Millions of eyes pointing on the piece of like the NFT that you've created and you own, and Zora just happened to be the vehicle for you to create it on chain. But then I think the other piece is like, how do we improve discovery on Zora.co, because we have so many people coming to the platform.
Yeah,
we've kind of had an evolution where we had like a magazine style homepage, which was like manually curated, you know, every single day. And that worked at the time because there wasn't that much content. But then what started happening was that there was so much content that we couldn't keep up and keep curating. And, you know, if you're curating like the top 1%, you're going to miss a lot of the amazing stuff that's in the rest of the market. And then, you know, people get annoyed and it's kind of imbalanced. Yeah. So we made a big shift from hand curated to basically algorithmic and into like more of a feed style and explore experience. And we're very early in that. Like it's been, I think we're coming into month 3, but we've all already seen like a huge uptick in basically fattening the long tail and distribution of mints. So instead of it being like, if you're on the homepage, you got a lot of mints. If you weren't, you didn't get a lot of mints. Yeah. Now we're seeing people getting like, a lot of people are getting more than they were prior to that model.
More dopamine hits over more of a long period of time.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like people discovering things that they wouldn't have seen otherwise. And you know, we're doing a lot of just like fundamental things you'd see on social networking sites, which is like we've got following, so it's like you can start to curate what you're seeing in the feed. We're getting better at recommending and you know, improving our kind of like algorithms that would like suggest what we think you're gonna like based on your activity and what you minted. But
we've definitely seen the results of some of that, because we had one open edition that did particularly high numbers, almost 14,000 mints, because it was shared by Base on their main Twitter. And so we got a lot of mints there. And then as a result, I mean, we've been minting everything for like a year or more. So like art from our community and all of our podcasts and everything. And all of those have been just sitting there. And many of them were just at like a nominal amount of mints, maybe 30 to 50. And over time, just like, people have been going to that open edition. It's closed now. It was a timed open edition. And then they're going and they're minting all this other stuff. And I don't know why, but it's interesting. Anyway,
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they like it.
If you find a video on a YouTube channel that you like and it's like, oh shit, okay, what else is on this channel? And then they might like all the other stuff that you do. So similar behavior. But I'd say the discovery side is easily one of the most ripe areas for experimentation. And I think we're thinking about it a lot on like the Zora platform level. But I also think like this is where the superpowers of crypto come in, and we're trying to lead to as many different unique and independent Zora clients as possible with their own like point of view and UX and
models.
So, yeah,
well, you know, we're always down to try the experimental shit and bug you at midnight when it's not working. So
Yeah.
Speaking of distribution, one of the biggest disruptors to distribution and this type of thing recently has been Farcaster. Obviously, you know, Dan, going way back. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, the overnight sensation of Farcaster that's been many years in the making.
Yeah, the 3-year overnight success. I love Farcaster. I've been on it more or less since it started. I think what's my unique point of view on it? Something that's been really cool to see over the past like year is obviously it started as like a 1-for-1 Twitter clone, which sounds like counterintuitive as like a starting point, because it's like, well, why would you copy a thing that already exists? Yeah. But I think they very smartly have innovated so well on the stack underneath it. Like they've essentially created a new layer of the blockchain stack with Farcaster hubs, which is passing around signed messages in real time without having to submit them to a blockchain.
Yeah.
So it's like, that means that every single cast, every single reaction, every single like, you can guarantee that it came from a particular user because it's being cryptographically signed by them, but you don't have to bear the cost of actually submitting them on chain. So it's unlocked a very new and high throughput part of the stack that hasn't really existed before. So that's one cool thing. And then what sounds obvious in hindsight is that, well, if every single user has an address and you have all of these social, you have a social graph and all these metrics you can play with, the types of token distributions you can do is like crazy. Like we know that reply with your ENS on Twitter, like, you know, like little hint and clue that this type of thing is huge. But now if you've got an address that is open access APIs for developers,
it's just reply.
You can just do things like, you know, reply with DGen or to distribute an airdrop like Farcaster OG NFTs and start to like do novel gating. And then obviously frames are a further breakthrough on that. And I guess it's been one that's just cool to see. Like, I think it's just like, sweet. Like that's a, this just, it, it makes sense that crypto Twitter is actually going to migrate to a crypto based Twitter. And now it's got all
who
these,
would have
like,
thought? Cheap... Most people wouldn't have.
Yeah. But it's been awesome kind of like experimenting and seeing Zora as like part of that kind of ecosystem where it's like, pushing the limits of like in app minting with Mint with Warps and now with Frames, and then there's Boosts as well. And I think
that
like,
Mint with Warps is huge. Like, that's really cool. And you guys were basically the prototype for what later became Frames. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who hasn't tried it yet, essentially, if you mint anything for free on the Zora L2 or the Base L2 now, and you just take the link from your browser and throw it onto Farcaster, it automatically turns into this frame where people can sort of see a thumbnail of your NFT and mint it with Warps, which is like an in-app currency over on Farcaster. How did that come to be? Did you reach out to Dan and be like, we want to do this? Or did he reach out to you? Or
I actually can't remember. Like we speak all the time. We've got like a shared Slack channel. Like we're always jamming out on stuff. I think it was, I remember Dan was looking at like, well, what are people actually doing on chain? Like of the users that are on Farcaster, like what are they doing?
Yeah.
And everyone was minting on Zora.
Minting,
so it's like,
a lot, yeah.
Like this feels like something, it's like, how can we use the Farcaster stack to meaningfully improve the user experience? And I think like they got to the Mint with Warps form factor is like, it was like a 10x improvement in collector UX. Like instead of having to go to a mobile website, connect your wallet, bounce out, sign, go back. And then it's, you know, 10 steps. It's like, oh, tap in app, done. Which is awesome. And then I think Dan is easily one of the top users of Zora. I think for Farcaster and himself, like they've been minting all of their kind of protocol announcements and dropping like Farcaster OG NFTs. And I think like he's just a big supporter of Zora. I'm a big supporter of Farcaster. And I think like they're very complementary in different ways. Like we've kind of got like social graph on the Farcaster side. Then you've got like content, media, asset ownership layer on the Zora side, and they very clearly pair well together. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun, kind of like building alongside each other.
Yeah, we've seen that. I mean, we did a release last week where we did a video, and now that you can post video on Farcaster, we were able to put a clip, you know, right on top, and then below it, you know, a mint frame that we were able to boost and say, you know, in the text, the first 200 are free, and it was crazy. Mm-hmm. Like the distribution we got on that tweet was better than what we would get for an ad on X, and I think that's kind of like a no shit moment for a lot of creators, where they realize that if you can actually pay to give your content to people, and then other people will ape in just because they missed it. Like FOMO is a powerful drug and a powerful distribution mechanism as well.
Yeah. And instead of just paying for the thing to be viewed and not really knowing who viewed it, as like someone who's now distributing that content, you know exactly who has it. And not only that, you've now got like more or less a perpetual connection between yourself and that person. And if they happen to, maybe you could start to update or like change the metadata on those NFTs, or that NFT might go up in value. And then that person's having like a really positive experience with your channel and your brand, and they can, they can do whatever with it after that point. Like, I think it's easy to see how cool and valuable and weird that can get over time. But yeah, it's like, it makes it very clear. So I'd rather spend $200 in that form factor versus $200 and they just looked at it.
And these people, they own your thing now, whether they like it or not. It's in their wallet. They'll have to send it to the burn address if they really don't like it. That's harder than just leaving a comment on YouTube. So.
That's true.
I'd love to hear your thoughts, if you have any, on the future of frames, because I mean, they've blown up, and obviously, everyone was super excited about them. But I actually don't think we've seen a fraction of what we're going to see in terms of frame functionality. And the big unlock for that is obviously going to be on-chain transactions, which I hear from a few little birdies are closer than we think. So I'd love to hear what you think might be the unlock, you know, a year down the road from frames that have on-chain transaction functionality.
It's a good question. Yeah, I think like getting them to actually work with on-chain transactions, there's going to be a lot of new, I think, infrastructure and tooling that comes out of that, because I think it's just such a new model. So I'd imagine like wallets will have to, there might be some like new wallet standards that emerge. I'm sure like it'll pair very nicely with smart wallets and account abstraction. And I'm curious to see if it's that like every Farcaster account will have a Farcaster smart wallet, or is it that you'll be able to basically choose, in the same way on Zora you have payment methods to like transact, will it be that when you're doing something on a frame, you actually have a list of all of your different wallets or accounts that you might have, and you get to choose to pay from that or not? And I imagine like they'll probably be priced in warps for the foreseeable future, so that's gonna be interesting too. But I guess the most obvious starting points is just like, well, I can now buy things, I can swap things, I could probably trade things. Like
maybe you can bid in a yellow auction in a frame.
Yeah, exactly. Like anything that you see on Twitter and click a link and go to a website to do, you'll just be able to do on the spot. So that's just going to be, I think that'll be like a huge gold rush in a sense, where like if for any builders, the simple approach might be like, what are the most common transactions that are happening on chain today, and like how can we build frames for those? And then the more speculative one would be like, what are transactions that are not so common that might get way more common if the UX is 10 times easier on something like a frame? And they might be the bigger ones, because they're like net new things that can happen. And I think we already saw
that a little bit with the free mint frames, just because people were like, this is magic. I click a button and it shows up in my wallet. And most people didn't even understand how that was happening. You know,
yeah,
which was so easy.
And then I could imagine like maybe an example of the latter thing of like what's something that's not happening that often that might happen more in this context is like the OpenSea deals thing is like, I actually think like quite a good idea, where it's like, oh, like I'll actually trade you this NFT for that NFT, but it's kind of off in the corner and it's hard to do in the OpenSea platform, just for I think a whole bunch of design and context reasons, where it might actually be a little bit easier to do in frames, where you could cast out an offer or a deal, or I don't know, I feel like there's room to experiment with those types of models that
That's
they
a
feel
cool
intuitively
idea.
need like they need the social context. So I'd probably do that. That might be like
Pokemon
one.
Pokemon card yeah. frame, basically. I have this card. Who will trade?
I think we'll probably most of the breakout stuff will probably be figuring out novel token distributions. So I think this isn't frame related, but I think if there was I would love to see like a degen Farcaster client. Like I think we've seen a lot of Farcaster clients right now that have their own twist on the UX, but I feel like there's I want to see like a particular channel break out into its own client. And I think like DGen has like a really straight shot there just because of the token. And it's like, well, instead of having to reply and type out the amount, what if that was just a button? And maybe that button is sufficient enough to start a whole new client around it and then do all sorts of other crazy stuff with it.
Plus, they can reward people for using the app in DGen too. Yeah. So
it's an exactly. Idea. And maybe there's like a swap button in there. Like, I think that would be really, that's like a really interesting side of Farcaster that I'm excited to see experiments happen with. I don't know.
That'd be really neat. You could have like a Uniswap right within your app to swap for DGen when you get DGen code by the DGen app. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen what Seneca and the PropF team have been doing with frames the past week or so?
No, I haven't. I've actually been on that online recently, but
that's okay. I can fill you in. It's pretty cool. They did an experiment basically where they did a frame and anyone could reply to it to nominate themselves or someone else for a retro reward for something that they've done for the Nouns ecosystem. And by replying, you were automatically nominating yourself or the other person for an award. And then in the first round, you had to click through to rounds.wtf. And if you had an active badge, and you followed the Nouns channel, you were automatically given 10 votes per day. And you just go down just like in a prop house type infrastructure and you just click your votes and you submit them. So that was pretty cool. And they did, and they're about to do the distribution of it and they're doing it proportional. So anyone who got above a certain number of votes gets that percentage of the total. I think it was 5 ETH total. So really neat. And now they're doing a second round with 3 ETH and they've taken it one step further. And now a like is a vote. So now if you don't have to go to this other site or anything. You're just voting, and that vote is literally an on-chain action. What are your thoughts on that type? But you mentioned token distribution from frames. This is kind of that, except it's not DGen or another warp. It's ETH. It's ETH right in your wallet.
That's really cool. That also makes me think that Nouns should probably figure out how to create an ERC-20 token at some point, because it's like I think giving away ETH is really cool. It's like I wonder wonder what superpowers would come from being able to give Noun away as like a ERC-20 token, because then you can start to lean into the scale of that. Nouns was like one of the most active channels in Farcaster for like quite some time, because it was like kind of first to lean into a lot of like novel crypto features. So it makes sense for it to like keep pushing the boundaries there and fund a Nouns Farcaster client too. That makes like a lot of sense to me.
I think that's happening right now, actually. There's a prop house for 150,000. If you're listening and you're a builder, go check out prop.house. You can build a client for the Nouns community and potentially win 50,000 USDC. So that's pretty cool. I'm excited to see what comes out of that round, actually.
That's cool. Very nice.
While we're talking about Nouns, I did want to ask you briefly about that. Obviously, you've been an early member and supporter of Nouns. Nouns even used Zora's tooling for their original for their auction, and still are using that open source technology. So there's a long standing relationship between yourself and Zora and Nouns. I'd love to know just what attracted you to Nouns in the first place, if you remember.
The model. I just remember it came across my radar because it was a fork of the Zora auction house. And I just remember being really impressed and like feeling a little bit jealous at how cool the model was, whereas like such a tight pairing of NFT collection, auction house, and DAO. And just thinking it was super elegant, really simple, and paired with like the art. And I think like a lot of the original people who started it, I was just like, wow, this is just like really exciting and something I never would have considered myself, and just feels intuitively correct on like a bunch of different dimensions. And then just couldn't stop thinking about it and the implications and all the experimentation and things you could do with it. So yeah, I guess it's, I kind of got sucked into the rabbit hole, and still a big believer in it. I think like where Nouns is at now is, you know, it's over 1,000, I guess over 3 years. Is it 3 years? Is it coming up on 3 years in August, right?
Almost 3 years, yeah.
Yeah. I think like the fork was a really big deal, a really important thing, and, you know, good to do. I think now like a lot of now it's kind of in like the hard part of a startup, which is like there's clearly something here that's very real. There's clearly something valuable, but now it's like what's actually going to be the things that are going to lead to durability of both the meme and sustainability of the DAO, and like what are the things that make it fun and are going to help distribute it as far wide as possible.
You have to find a product meme fit, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I think it might be product. Yeah, exactly. I think like I've always been the most obvious thing to me, and I think like what's always been exciting is like it just feels like a breakthrough media funding model. Like there's so much amazing art and content in media that gets produced around Nouns. Like, for example, this podcast is like directly within the orbit of Nouns. Yep. And like part of the Nouns breakthrough model is like you have CCO, so it's completely free, yet it's very valuable to own because of the NFTs. I think mm-hmm. we should be extending that line, that train of thought, to all media that is funded and produced in Nouns, and that should all be on chain. I think there's like really simple ways for us to like tie economic connections back to the original DAO such that it can fund media, it can earn from that media and therefore fund more. And like we look up 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and it's like, it's this like breakthrough model. It's a breakthrough disruption of like the movie studio model on some dimension, you know, with all the weirdness of multiplied in there.
I think that's, I'm pretty bullish on that as well. Cause I mean, we're doing all the content we're making, and we also encourage all of our artists who are submitting to our contest to make their content. CC0, obviously, you know, this podcast is called Zero Rights Reserved. So just like mm-hmm. it says on the tin, anyone can use it as they like. And yeah, with creator rewards and other unlocks like this, we can hopefully create these flywheels that kind of are the dream of the original Nouns founders, I think.
Exactly, yeah. And then I think there's also like the IRL stuff is also really cool. Like I think the coffee shop in LA is going to be cool. I think the sandwich shop in Melbourne, like building more of those like real world touch points, I actually think is like an important part of the strategy too.
Yeah, that's a superpower of Nouns, I think, is just not having to focus on any one thing. Like obviously we lean into what works, and we kind of like emergently do that. I think that's why we fund so much animation and so much of those types of art, is because we just know that it works and we get good bang for our buck for those types of funding. But then, like things like Nouns Deli and the coffee shop are obviously still experiments, but it's great to be able to fund something and like people will be like, aren't you a media company? Like, why are you funding a coffee shop? And it's like, because we can, you know, why not?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a micro Disney World strategy on some dimension. And then, or things like Quack, I think it's got like 1.1 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah, insane. We love Quack.
That's totally crazy. Or like Nounish in Instagram Reels. Like they've got so many followers and they get so many views. So it's like that. Yeah, it's, I feel like it's working. It's just because it's so new, it's like very legible, which then means it gets misunderstood and more often than not undervalued. So I think it's just going through that, like, I think Zora went through that, you know, similar stage or like period a couple of years ago. And then it actually forced you to be like, okay, like what is actually going to work here? And then use one foot in front of the other, iterate quickly, keep shipping. And then eventually you start to figure it out.
Well, a smaller treasury might be a forcing function to that anyway, just because people are maybe a little more careful about what we fund.
Yeah,
exactly. As long as we don't get too careful, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's an infinitely difficult balance that I think you'll never get exactly right. But as long as you keep ebbing and flowing and you don't fall off the rails, then you should be okay.
I was going to ask you what Noun should do more of, but I think you answered that question without having been asked it. But I'd love to ask you the flip side of that question. Is there anything you think Noun should be doing less of?
I'd say podcasts. That's a good question. I feel like there's been lots of proposals for like smaller, the fashion things have, they've always been interesting and they create good images from them, but they seem like expensive for the return, I guess is like the first thing that comes to mind.
Like merch, right? Like thing, like yeah, collaborations like merch. On merch.
Yeah, exactly. And then and then like sponsorships seem really expensive and then like quite hard and amorphous to track. And then, yeah. But otherwise, like, I think like the proposal velocity is quite low at the moment. So I think it could always be doing more, I think at this point. But if I was to say like doing more of what, it's probably like more of just funding and minting media. It's like, obviously I live in that world and think about it every day. So I have like a very strong bias for it, but I actually think that is like that just feels like so ripe for exploration. And then I think a project I wish was still here that isn't is Nouns AI. Like I think that was like actually a really big deal. And was like one of the
big fan, and I honestly actually tried to pound the pavement for them to try to get support, and I don't know, the support just wasn't there, but I agree with you actually. I think they were onto something.
Yeah, I mean it was like one of the reasons I think Opepen actually started to like break out, because people were able to remix Opepens in really interesting ways. So I think that was some real,
I feel like maybe we pivoted from AI and maybe we shouldn't
have. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, nothing else, nothing really comes to mind otherwise.
Those are interesting insights for sure. As we sort of wind down here, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your thoughts on the future for on-chain creators, obviously being one myself and lots of people on Zora being on-chain creators. Love to know, you know, as you look maybe even just 1 year or 5 years in the future, what do you think the future landscape looks like for on-chain creators?
Over the next 5 years, what I imagine will happen is that your on-chain distribution will flip your off-chain distribution. And in many cases for the best creators, that's already true. I think things that I've been thinking about, so I think like I'll assume that most people will just start minting all of their content and media by default. And then starting to get increasingly sophisticated in managing the splits and kind of economic sharing between the people that they're working with on their project. And then what I think that might unlock is starting to expand the number of people that can actually create and contribute to that channel or the collection or the thing that you're doing. Like I think a lot about what might it look like for people to start submitting their own videos to your channel. And like you could vote to approve or deny it being added to your channel with like splits involved and stuff like that. And allowing like community contributions or like you being able to like commission things as well. So it's like you could send like a commission to someone, and if they produce it, then it gets like added. Like I think there's ways for us to start. It's like, okay, we've got like mostly single player with a little bit of splits built in. How do we actually start help these channels turn into larger and larger institutions where it's kind of like Mr. Beast just started as himself. And now eventually he's got this like huge company and infrastructure behind him and a financial machine. How can you help lead to like a crypto native machine using all of the superpowers of crypto that are built in?
Yeah, I think that's true. Like I think splits are definitely a leveraged bet almost on smart contracts and like the power of them, because so many industries run on these like black boxes of like who gets what. Like the music industry is a great example. You know, like a lot of these musicians don't even really know why they get the check that they get every month, because it's just so obfuscated what they're getting from what. But in this case, you know, those splits are on chain and you know exactly, you know, what earned what and who gets what from it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess maybe to flip the question, like what would be, say you were running Zora for like the next 3 months, like what would you want to see? What would you add or remove?
I mean, to me, it's an easy question to answer. I just think like distribution is and discoverability is the big thing that creators really need. And I think you guys are definitely innovating and way more than anyone else, but that's still the pain point for us, is like we're creating everything we're creating, we're putting on chain. And more and more of it is being minted every day, which is great. But a lot of it's, you know, sitting there and you know, 50 or 60 mints is great, but we want like thousands of mints. We want our, you know, lots of people to see our content. So like, how can we work together to get good content? Now, you got to make it first. I'm not saying people should just be able to create shit and it gets, you know, distributed to everyone. But if you're making good, solid content that's useful, you know, just finding ways to empower, you know, content creators to get those pieces of content into the wallets of the people that, that want to see them. That'd be my answer.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah, I think that that's probably the thing. Because if you're just like minting it in the void, it's like all of the features in the world can be great, but like if no one's there to enjoy it and collect it, then it's like why bother? So yeah,
it feels bad for creators and like even like people who are, you know, serial experimenters. Like I've always experimented with everything in my career, so I for me it's fun just to experiment with new things, but for a lot of people, it's scary to experiment. And if you're an artist and you're, here's a great example. You know, I convinced Corey Van Loo to do a mint with the Yellow Collective, which was his very first free mint and his first mint on an L2. And it definitely took a little bit of like cajoling to get him to consider, you know, doing his first non-mainnet piece. And then more than that, like minting something for free, he was kind of like, is this going to like devalue my art or my brand? And I just kind of said like, look, this is a way for you to make a piece that's going to be completely accessible to everyone in the world. And because Zora's created it, this has these creator rewards set up, you'll also get paid for your work. So it's not like you're not being, you know, paid back for your contributions. And he was like, maybe like skeptical, but because of our relationship, he's like, let's do it. And in the end, we were able to, you know, we were able to give him over an ETH in creator rewards for a piece that he released for free. And it was, you could see sort of it clicking for him. It's like, okay, this is like potentially a new type of distribution to be put into the, in, you know, into the repertoire along with one of ones and whatever else he wants to do. This is another thing I can do and potentially still be rewarded for and put food on the table, et cetera. So I think that was pretty powerful.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It's an awesome story to hear. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Cool.
For sure. In closing, one thing I just wanted to ask you is for some advice, is not for me, although I'll probably take it too, but for any builders or creators out there who are watching and you know, maybe they have questions about what your best advice would be for them as creators or as builders in the on-chain space. Is there any piece of advice you would share?
I'd say have fun with it and be fast. If you do those two things, like having fun with it is a great way to like, actually a great way to index your decision making, because if you're enjoying and having fun, then you know other people probably will too, and then worst case you've had a bit of fun. But the speed part, and I think we've learned this, is like the faster you're able to create, the more feedback you get, which then makes it really easy for you to start getting grounded in the reality or the truth of what people want or are interested in. If you have like a slow feedback loop, like crypto changes so quickly all the time that you can start to detach from what's really needed. But if you can move quickly and find the smallest possible incremental win, like we call them like big little wins. Like we're always thinking like, if we had to ship something in 2 days, like what would that version be? And more often than not, that version is actually like still quite good. And it moves the ball forward and gives you a lot more information. And then, you know, the next subsequent big little win might actually be quite different after doing it versus what you thought it was going to be.
I love that.
Yeah, I think
so. Iterate. Don't be afraid to iterate, basically. And
yeah, I'd say like it's all big little wins. Like it's not doing huge big things. It takes 6 months. Like just find the big little wins and just, you know, think in 1 to 2 days to get started. And then if you get yourself into a position where you can think a week at a time and then a month at a time and ahead, then that's awesome. But big little wins is where it's at, and just have fun with it, because if you're having fun, then other people are probably gonna have fun too.
Amazing. Anything that people should be excited about from Zora coming up? Any alpha you want to drop? Anything that's coming down the line that you're able to share?
Mobile app.
That is big news.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Coming very soon. That's probably the big one.
That is huge. So mint, like you can mint and everything from the mobile, I'm assuming. I guess it would be pretty weird if you had a mobile app that you couldn't mint from. But.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'll be able to create and you'll be able to mint, and you will never have to leave the app to do it. You'll just be able to to do it.
I think that's huge. I think Dan has spoken a lot on podcasts recently about like how they've had a real mobile first focus, and how he believes that, you know, most people mm-hmm. consume content on their phone. And I think that's true. So that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, big alpha leak, but yeah.
you heard it here first. Amazing. Yep.
Awesome. Cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jacob, for taking the time to come on with us on ZeroPod. It was a great conversation. Didn't even really feel like a podcast. Just felt like a chat with friends. So I appreciate you coming on, and we'll see you on chain.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.